Hello and welcome to my podcast, How I Teach Golf. My name's Duncan Walger and I hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of How I Teach Golf. Today I'm going to the island of Jersey and I'm speaking to Alex Mollin. Alex, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Duncan. And you?
Yeah, very well, very well. Alex, we've been on a few CPD courses, pieces, but I don't know how you got into the game of golf, if you grew up in Jersey. So for the listeners, give us your backstory.
Well, it's quite a long story, really. I was born in Jersey and I grew up here, but I didn't actually start playing golf until I was 23. So a bit of a late starter. As a child, I played a lot of different sports. There are always golf clubs around, and we did live just down the road from the Royal Jersey. But at that stage, I played badminton, tennis, football, a lot of different school sports, but not actually golf. And then I went to university, not really of my own wish. It was one of those things where at school, the expectation was to go to university, but I didn't really want to go, and I didn't really have a plan. So having been to Loughborough for a few weeks, I ended up coming back, worked in finance for a while and did all my accountancy exams. And then off the back of that, basically, I decided that working in an office wasn't for me. My ambition probably at school had been, to be almost like a PE teacher, but that just hadn't happened. And so off the back of that, I actually went to work at a leisure centre for the summer as a bit of a summer job, get away from the accountancy, do something different. And actually, the point of that was that they'd offered me the chance to become a tennis coach. So, but a strange coincidence, they had a new driving range built at the centre. We had free golf balls included as part of working there. And I just started really hitting golf balls. And coincidentally, my mum had actually put my name down at the Royal Jersey as a child. And even though we still have waiting lists now, so over here they're still waiting lists at Le Moy Golf Club and the Royal Jersey. But at that time it was over 10 years. So my membership came up in my early 20s. And I thought, well, I should probably just give it a go. And that's really where it started at that time.
So you picked up the game of golf at 23. How long was it before you did or started your PGA?
So again, it's all a bit of a long story, I guess. I didn't start my PGA till I was just coming up to 32. So, but within a year of taking up the game, I'd become the Channel Island Bronze Division champion. So I got, relatively good relatively quickly.
Yeah.
And even at that really early stage, I'd almost decided that I wanted to become a professional, but obviously had to get my handicap down and with stubborn determination, work my way down to a 3-4 handicap, representing the island and becoming, winning various things along the way. But I basically went to work for my family. So I worked for the family business on the kind of basis that I'd have loads of time off to play golf.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a bit of an easy option. But unfortunately, within a couple of months of starting that, my dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer.
Oh, no.
So that started I ended up staying there for about 5 years until we wound down the business and decided that, my mum was well due her retirement. It then gave me the opportunity to turn pro, and I was really lucky to be offered the chance to work at Le Miel Golf Club on the island and become an assistant there.
So you were travelling backwards and forwards to the Belfry or to Birmingham University to do your PGA?
Yeah, so obviously there's nothing that takes place on the island, so it is very much back and forth. And with the 21 events that, you're expected to take part in, there was nothing actually locally that I could compete in either. So everything I had to do was back over in England. So it was quite a mission. But one thing that I did do, because I was fed up travelling back and forth to compete, I decided that maybe we should have a PGA event on the island. So I contacted Sam Smith in the South region, And yeah, off the back of that, we've now got a PGA event back on the island every year as well. So that's really nice.
Yeah, I mean, I used to sit next to Sam at school. I should get him on the podcast, actually. Maybe not, because he could tell too many stories.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
But I think Sam does an awesome job for the South region. And I know that you do have the event every year on the island. I haven't played in it, but I didn't know that came about due to yourself. So, I mean, that's a fantastic achievement.
Well, it was one of those, I guess for me, it was a case of, well, if there wasn't one, why couldn't we create one? And there had been one in the past, so I knew that it was possible. And I thought, well, even if 4 out of the 21 events I could play on courses that I knew, obviously that helps and avoids the travel and the expenses that do come for living on an island. You know, Jersey's a fantastic place to live. I can't complain, but it is, you know, costly and time consuming when you're wanting to get off the island.
So tell me a bit about the island itself, how much golf you can be exposed to on the island, and then pretty much who helped you through your PGA and your further development from there.
So golf on the island, we've got the island itself, for those who don't know, is only 9 miles by 5 miles. So it's pretty teeny when you put it into perspective. But we do have 6 golf courses over here, 3 18-hole courses and 3 9-hole courses. The most famous ones generally are the Royal Jersey, which has this amazing history with Harry Vardon and Ted Ray and Tommy Horton. And the other one that most people have heard of is Le Moy Golf Club. As an island, generally, people over here are quite active. I think it's just the lifestyle, you know, beach life, being outside. We do have great weather as well. So, you know, there are a lot of people that take part in a lot of sports. So, you know, the kind of, I guess, island golf scene is thriving, really. And that's demonstrated by the fact that we do still have waiting lists at the two main clubs. You know, for men at the Royal Jersey, it's still 5 to 8 years that you're waiting if you want to get in. For ladies, it's less than that now, but it's still significant.
So then you became a member at Royal Jersey.
Yes.
And then, so was, which one, was Tommy was at Royal Jersey, correct?
Tommy was at Royal Jersey, yes.
So did you know him quite well, or?
Yeah, he was fantastic to me. He was such a great support throughout my training, and I think he loved golf, and, you know, he loved golfers, and he was always willing to support people coming through, you know, whether that's, we run a junior festival over here and he would be there every year supporting. And, you know, personally, he went out of his way to help me, and he, you know, he's such a fantastic man, and he was so, so kind to me as well.
I mean, I only met Tommy a couple of times, and for people that didn't know Tommy Horton, not only was he a fantastic player on the European Tour and on the European Senior Tour, but also he used to do a lot of the John Jacobs Golf Schools. He used to do a lot of the short game for John in the John Jacobs Golf Schools. And I also think I'm right in saying that he also, at the start of each year, the new guys that had gotten to the European Tour, he would be one of the coaches that would assist the new players on the European Tour in anything like career advice or playing advice, when, you know, kind of mentoring them through. Would that be correct?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I do know that he was always very much involved. He would go off and do training camps in Spain, you know, until really late days. And at times when he really wasn't very well, he was still doing his bit. And, you know, at times he really shouldn't have been traveling, but he was determined. He was determined to do it, and he kept going and kept going. And even on days like this, when the weather was pretty grim, he would be out there still practicing. You know, he was an inspiration to a lot of people.
He helped you with playing side, teaching side, or how, what was your involvement with him?
So as far as that, not much. I was based at Les Mielles Golf Club, so I worked under professional Wayne Osmond, and he was my head professional. But he had, Wayne himself had been one of Tommy's assistants.
Okay.
So there was a real link there. You know, there's a number of golf pros over here that had worked for Tommy in the past. So there was that connection, and through Wayne and through being at Laymail, you know, I met with Tommy. I never had a lesson with Tommy as far as with my PGA work. He wasn't involved in that so much, but as a kind of supporter, he was always there, and I knew I could call on him if I needed to.
That's fantastic. And then after, so you, let's say you, we're jump forward a little bit, so you become PGA qualified. When was that, Alex?
So I graduated in, I completed it in 2013 and graduated in 2014.
Okay. And then what did you do after that? Because I think we first met, did we first meet on the level three?
So yeah, we first met on the level three, which is a few years after that. So when I qualified, when I completed the PGA training program, I was lucky and I worked hard at it, and I did qualify as the Titleist PGA Assistant of the Year and Female Assistant of the Year. So having won all 3 years, so that's a bit of an accolade. That
wow, that's really impressive.
Quite proud of.
I barely qualified, so talking to someone who won Assistant of the Year or Trainee of the Year is fantastic, because I literally just qualified.
I think because having come into the program at an older age, you know, I was 10 years behind everybody else. And so very determined to make it work and make it happen and yeah, give it 100% really. So so that was 2013 when I finished the program, and I went straight into the advanced certificate at the University of Birmingham.
Yeah.
So did that for that next year. So basically almost graduated at the same time as I'd finished my advanced certificate. And then off the back of that, I also purchased a TrackMan, did all my TPI training, set up my own coaching business. And then from that also, that's where it filtered into to level three. And that's when we first met.
Brilliant. So let's not fast forward, but let's take it from there. So you've done your PGA qualifications, you've done your ad-cert, you've purchased your tech. So where are you working at this point, and where are you working now? Because do you just teach at one site, or you're at multiple sites?
Yeah, so I stayed at Laymail until 2016, and I then actually was lucky enough to be offered a job back at the Royal Jersey. So that's where I've been for the last pretty much bang on 3 years now.
Okay.
So that was, you know, I'm really grateful for that opportunity, that the course, you know, it's a fantastic, great facility. I'm also lucky that I'm actually quite flexible on the island. I do work at the Royal Jersey. We have a driving range about 5 minutes away where I work as well. There's a 9-hole facility over here where I take a lot of my ladies groups, because the course at the Royal is actually a really, really busy golf course, and to take beginners groups out at busy times is obviously quite difficult. So being able to go to the 9-hole course where it's generally nice and quiet, par threes, it's a really useful facility to have and to use as well.
So would I be right in saying a lot of your one-to-one coaching of your more established golfers would be done at Royal Jersey?
Yes.
And then your beginner groups, your lady groups and improving groups and introduction to golf and the golf course would be done at the other facility.
That's generally the way it does work. Yeah. We don't actually have a driving range or practice ground facility actually at Royal Jersey anymore. So this is where the Longville driving range tags onto that. So either one or the other is where generally I'll do either range lessons or with better players on the golf course at the Royal Jersey.
Okay, so let's say I'm coming to, I'm seeking you out, Alex, here for some help with my game. I know that you're on the island of Jersey. I'm prepared to come over to the island. How would I go about booking a lesson with you? And then what happens? Tell us what happens in the first like 5-10 minutes, or do I get a questionnaire beforehand that I fill out? What happens?
As far as booking, I do have an online booking system. We use Pro Agenda at the club. But I do actually personally like to make contact with people before I start a lesson program. I think, you know, building a relationship from day one and finding out some information is really useful. You know, even if it's something as simple as are you left or right-handed? Which side do I set the track man up on? You know, just knowing, being prepared for whoever's walking in the door. So generally, I'd prefer somebody to either email me or give me a call, and then we can come up with a plan. If somebody was particularly coming over to the island for coaching, which does happen on occasion, and I do also go to Guernsey to coach as well, I'll usually send a questionnaire, you know, starting point to get an understanding of the player, and then really, really go from there. If it's a local person, generally the first, you know, 10, 15 minutes of meeting someone will be spent learning a bit about them, building an understanding of what they're looking for, and really going from there.
So you said you did your TPI certifications, is that correct?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did that, again, pretty much straight out of my PGA training. I really like the TPI stuff. I'm just at the moment, I've been working my way through the level 2 golf, and it's something that's on the to-do list. But I really do utilise that as part of my coaching. And I think screening's really valuable, learning a bit about the player beforehand and being able to link, you know, the physical to the technical is really important.
So will you screen all new students and then periodically through a program screen again?
I don't screen everybody, no. I wish I could. Going forward, maybe in the future, facilities based, I would really like to do that if I could. I offer it to everybody. Again, it's a choice. And I think for me, a lot of the time, the more likely clients that will take up the offer are the better players, you know, looking for that edge. And that's really where that'll kick in. But even then, with any player, I think the TPI stuff is really valuable.
Yeah, and so you use, obviously you've got your TPI training in there and your track man. So what percentage of your lessons are full swing, on course, short game, and I'll say putting as well. So I'll separate those out.
Oh, that's quite a tricky question, really, off the top of my head. I think probably about 50% of my lessons would be full swing. So they would take place on the driving range. I'd probably put about 30% of my lessons are on the golf course. And then I'd say the other 20% are short game and putting. But putting is something that I'm really trying to get into. And last year I felt that putting was probably one of the weaker areas of my coaching. And with that, went off to do the putting solutions training with Phil Kenyon late last year.
Fantastic. So, was that up at Formby?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was a complete eye-opener and something I'm really happy that I did. But also off the back of that, in the last few weeks, I've now become an aimpoint instructor. So really trying to open up that avenue of coaching and do more putting going forward. So while it's probably quite a small percentage right now, I'm hoping if I spoke to you again this time next year, the percentages will be quite different.
So you did your aim point with Jamie, or?
I did, yeah. Jamie came over. We were lucky with the weather. Had a really good day, and I'm really excited to get started with that.
Brilliant. So is there any other like certifications or any other things you've looked into that you would like to, you know, continue your learning or your development within?
Well, we've spoken about the plain truth stuff, so that's definitely something that I'm interested in. I think for me, just learning from people, you know, learning from other coaches, being exposed to different ways of looking at things. You know, I'm really lucky. I've been out a few times now and spent some time with Butch Harmon, and I'm going back out next month to spend some more time with him, and just really just soaking up as much information as I can. You know, time isn't on my side, unfortunately, having taken up the game that bit later and than the average, and so really just trying to soak up as much information from as many people as I can. I did go out and do the Vision 54 program, actually, when Ollie was out still at Talking Stick. He was there when I went out, and that was again really valuable learning time out there. And there's so much great stuff out there, and I wish I had, you know, more time to do more as well.
So you learned from Pierre and Lynn with regards to a lot more of the human skills and sort of stuff, or did you do that with Ollie?
So I did that with Pierre and Lynn. I did the 3-day coach program that they offer.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that stuff that they do is obviously quite different perhaps to a lot of coaches out there, but I think it's definitely got its place. I think I use a lot of that with a lot of the groups that I do, and I do a lot of ladies coaching and beginner coaching as well, and I think a lot of those skills are really valuable, well, at any level, but also things that can be really well applied by people at the earlier stages in their golf careers, I guess.
No, totally, 100% agreed. So I want to go back a little bit, and I want you to tell me about your experiences with Butch. So how did the first meeting come about? And then I'm gonna be a little, if I can, be a bit cheeky, and just tell us a couple of stories or what kind of happens in the time that you spend with him.
So yeah, he has been so supportive, and he is such a lovely man and a fantastic coach. And I made contact with him back in 2015. It was
okay.
And then I went out and spent time at his school in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I've been out there, I've been out and shadowed him for 3 days at a time. The stories that you could tell spending time with Butch, there are probably not many that should be recorded. And but the way that he coaches, the way he builds relationships with people, I think is something that, you know, really struck me at that early stage is how he puts anybody at ease so quickly, and the simplicity of his coaching, but the effectiveness of the way that he does things. You know, it's for me, it's such a great opportunity and something that I'm thrilled and happy to do every time I'm out there. It's probably my best days of my life probably are when I've been out there in Las Vegas with him.
I mean, so in a normal day, and I don't think Butch ever has a normal day, but if you were to say a full day with Butch, would you predominantly get all levels of golfer, or would they be, you know, are we talking tour players, or what have you seen when you've been out there?
So most of the time I'm out there, he's working with schools, so he's working with anybody, so the whole range of players. There was one lady there who her husband decided that if she was going to have a golf lesson, she was going to learn with Butch Harmon, through to, you know,
nice.
a good place to start.
Yeah.
Suzanne Pettersson was out there the first year I was out there, so that was really interesting as well. So there's been a whole range, you know, complete spectrum of players. The average is, you know, a mid-handicap player out there, mm-hmm. for the experience. But you know, there is the whole range of abilities that he works with, obviously.
And what do you say... Obviously, the way that he puts people at ease and his rapport that he gets so quickly with different people. Do you see his kind of style of teaching or his style of coaching change really quickly from person to person? Or you've seen him a lot more. You've seen him coach a heck of a lot more than what I have. But like you said, he does have this amazing ability to put people at ease, ask the right questions. And obviously you can flat out teach, but would you say, is it his learning styles, or what does he do that you think that just makes him so good?
I think he has this ability to relate to anyone. I think, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter who it is or what level they're at. He does seem to just be able to pitch everything just right. You know, that, I guess, comes from years and years of experience of working with thousands and thousands of different people. But that way that he can pitch it just right, you know, he's so perceptive. He gets people, you know, within minutes of walking through the door. He knows, I guess, what they're looking for. He knows how to deal with the different type of individual that he's dealing with on a daily basis, but also the way that perhaps they want to learn. I guess some people would go there and expect more, you know, technology, more current methods. Mm. But, you know, the way he does it, the simplicity of the way he coaches, and he sticks to, you know, he sticks to his point, he sticks to his values, and it is really, really fascinating to watch him.
And then what do you tend to do What do you tend to take away from each time you go out there? What comes back from Vegas to Jersey with you?
Motivation to get better, I guess, because every time I'm out there, I think I still have so much to learn.
100%. Whenever I spend time with, whether it be Jim, Chris, or a lot of the Plain Truth guys, you know, any of the top coaches, you always feel as though they motivate and inspire us to get better in ourselves. And you know, I couldn't think of a better person than learning from them, Butch.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think more than anything, I come back with this kind of trying to keep things simple. I guess that's one thing. I try, and because I guess I use TrackMan on a daily basis really over here. When I go out there, everything is almost, you know, tipped on its head, and the simplicity and the way that he coaches, and it reminds me, you know, often that less is more. You know, do the fundamentals well, make sure that people are feeling good about themselves as part of a lesson. You know, they're basic things really, but I think it's the basics that he does so well. But you know, I guess for me, it's coming back, and as I say, every time just thinking, that's where I want to be, that's where I need to get better, and just focuses my motivation as well.
Fantastic. So tell us a bit about the programs or the things you've set up on the island to get more people into the game of golf. You kind of touched on the women's groups that you've started. So how did that kind of come about?
So I was finding, I guess, as a female coach, you know, you do have a lot of ladies come to you for lessons, which is fantastic. And I'm fortunate that I've kind of built a reputation on the island now where, you know, it's almost if a woman wants to learn to play golf, they come to me, or it's like a first stop, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
But when I was doing my ad cert at the University of Birmingham, I was actually put in touch with Alistair Spink at that time, because there was a program about creating, you know, using mentors. And I signed up for that and made contact with Alistair. And we were talking about the ladies coaching. And at that time, he didn't have Love Golf. Mm-hmm. He had Here Come the Girls, I think it was called at that time. And we spoke about, you know, almost creating an identity for the women's coaching that I was offering on the island. And from that, I basically created the T-Birds, which started off as coaching programs for ladies, but has since become coaching programs and also a society alongside that.
Cool.
So with that, every year we have an average 50 to 60 members of the society, plus all the people coming through the coaching programs. And what that's created is a real community of women on the island, and the benefits that they've got from that. So not just the golf, but the friendships, the relationships, the social aspect of the game. And that for me has been a real learning curve as well, because while, you know, for me, I came into the game being, as I guess, a sports person and being competitive, but there's so many people that use golf for so much more than that. And, you know, we've got a member that credits the society with saving her life. You know, there are things that have come out of it that I never would have imagined when I thought I'd set up a, you know, a ladies golf society.
So some really powerful and impactful stuff.
Yeah. And that was the thing that really struck me, is how important this can be. And even a Christmas just gone, I had a couple of, you know, these Christmas cards where people write that you don't realize how much the T-Birds means to these people and what it's brought to their life at times where times have been difficult. And off the back of that, then I saw that there was a real maybe need or opportunity that there are a lot of people that do come to the game at difficult times, you know, in their life, whether it's divorce or bereavement or other things. And so back in 2017, I started Recovery Golf, which unfortunately I haven't had a massive amount of time to spend on, but I'm hoping to build that more this year. And really just focusing on how powerful golf can be in impacting on people's lives. And, you know, the research out there now about the well-being and health benefits of game and mental health, you know, everybody's talking about mental health at the moment, and how we can use golf for far more than, you know, getting a handicap and going out to play every weekend, that there's so many people that could benefit from the game in so many different ways.
And I think there was just a publication or something just came out saying that golf is or may be available through the NHS soon.
Yeah, you know, I read that and I thought that's, you know, fantastic. And through my own kind of personal circumstances, seeing, you know, golf can be fantastic for, you know, stroke recovery, yeah, rehabilitation. You know, there's all different ways that we could use it. And it's not necessarily about even, you know, completing nine holes. It's being able to just get out there. And even if it's one hole, being able to just in the fresh air, playing a game, being around friends, communicating, socialising, all these things that can be so important for people, especially if they're isolated.
That's awesome. I mean, that's awesome. So the T-Birds and Recovery Golf, is that something that you see just staying on the island, or do you actually travel with them? So do you do like Alex golf holidays type things?
Yep, the T-Birds go on tour. So we've done that for 4 or 5, when did we start it? 2014. So yes, this year will be our fifth trip. We generally go to France just because, you know, the ferry from here to St. Malo is an hour. And when you're traveling with 20 to 25 other people, you know, the ferry generally is the easiest option. So we jump on the ferry, we go to France and have a really, you know, fun time away for the weekend. And that's basically the highlight. I think most people, not maybe a bit of a sweeping statement, but a lot of people join the society, I think, purely for T-Birds on Tour trip.
That's excellent. Brilliant. So you've got that, you've got recovery golf, you've obviously got your one-to-one coaching, obviously very, very busy. What does Alex get up to outside of golf? What's what do you like doing?
Recently I've taken, about 2 years ago or 18 months ago, I took up running. So I got involved in fundraising for the National Brain Appeal, which is the charity associated with the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery in London. Okay. They treated my mum a few years ago, and we wanted it to kind of give something back. So ran the Royal Parks Half Marathon, not mm-hmm. this year, last year. And that kind of kicked off the fundraising, and then ran the London Marathon again for the National Hospital. The T-Birds have actually fundraised during 2018. So in the last 18 months, raised over £15,000 for the charity as well.
That's fantastic.
So that's been good fun. And I've really enjoyed the running. But unfortunately, I think my competitiveness means that I've become a bit addicted and seeing how fast I can get.
So you're still doing a lot of running now?
Unfortunately, over Christmas, I've picked up a bit of an injury, so I've had to be sensible and ease back a little bit. But I'm doing actually the Cancer Research winter run in London this weekend, and then doing another half marathon for the National Brain Appeal in March. So yeah, so I enjoy the fundraising side of things as well, and if I can combine it with the running, it's nice to do something away from golf, but it's also good to do a sport where you're the beginner as well. Like, you know, just by taking up running and doing the different strength and conditioning programs, it really opens your eyes to different ways of looking at things, and things that you can incorporate within your own coaching as well.
Absolutely. And then, is there any plans on more marathons, or are we staying at halves? So what's the plan?
I think that depends on my knee's prognosis at the moment. I'm waiting to see. I'm meant to be doing a ultra marathon in May, but we'll see if that happens or not.
So an ultra marathon, does that mean more than one?
So what that means is, over here we have the North Coast, which is a really rocky cliff path terrain, and they're doing a 20 mile North Coast challenge. So you basically run from one side of the island and back again. I've signed up for the relay version, which is just two of us, but it's still going to be pretty grueling. So we'll see if that happens or not.
That's fantastic. So when you're training and or racing, is there anything you listen to? Do you listen to podcasts, or in your time away from the golf course and away from running, are you an avid reader, or what do you listen to and what do you read, really?
So when I'm running, I don't actually listen to anything at all. I think I just quite enjoy having a bit of empty space. I find at times, I think with social media and emails and text messages, at times I just feel frazzled. I think everybody who's self-employed and trying to keep up with everything. So I think actually when I run, I just have that headspace. I don't listen to anything. I just enjoy having a bit of downtime. I enjoy reading. I wish I had more time to do it. I enjoy reading on holidays, but at home, unfortunately, I don't spend a massive amount of time reading. And that's a New Year's resolution for this year, is to actually try and do more.
Cool. And then, so we know what you're going to do CPD wise with your golf and bits and pieces. And is there any ambitions or any other goals that you've set yourself for this year?
So, as I said, putting is definitely a bit of a focus for this year, really trying to move forward with that. I think I'm always open to opportunities that come along. See what happens. I'd like to spend time with more, different coaches, looking at different ways of doing things. I'm going to work at the Open in July on the PGA, with the PGA Swing Zone. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
Just always looking for ways to improve and things that I can work at to move forward.
Brilliant. So how much golf do you actually play yourself now? How much would you say you get to play?
Not a lot. That's my, I wish I had more time. And again, talking about what I'd like to do this year, I was hitting some balls yesterday thinking, I do need to spend more time at this. The reason, I guess, for most of us, we came into it because we love the game and we love playing the game, and not having much time to do that. So, the PGA event coming up in May, we've got a pro-am on the first day, so obviously need to pull my socks up and get some practice in preparation for that.
Get the game ready for that.
And if anybody was interested in coming over, it's a really, really good, relaxed event. As I say, 2 days, we've got a pro-am on the first day. It's an individual event on the second day, playing at Lamoille and the Royal Jersey, and anybody is welcome to come over and can help with accommodation and anything else that people may need.
And when's the dates of that again?
So it is maybe, off the top of my head, 14th and 15th.
14th and 15th of May. And if they want any more details, either contact you or Sam Smith through the PGA South region.
Yes, that's it. It is not a regional event. Anybody's welcome. So, anybody from anywhere in the world really could come over and play. It's not restricted to the South region.
And you get a chance to play at two awesome courses.
Yeah.
And like you said, you can go on a bit of historical. I still find it amazing that you had two legends of the game come from the island in Harry Vardon and Ted Ray. I mean, that's just, I still find that amazing.
Driving into the golf club when you've got Harry Vardon's statue there and there's a stone out on the course with Ted Ray. The atmosphere and the feeling at the golf club, there is something special about it. I love St Andrews. When I go up there, you have that feeling. There's something about the place that, it's just got that history. And I guess not quite on that level, but there is definitely that feel at the Royal Jersey that is quite special.
Excellent. So if you had the opportunity to play one more round of golf anywhere in the world with anyone you wanted to through the history of the game, where would you play and who would you play with? So fancy four ball, I'm saying.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious, but I would love to play at Augusta. I think that would be my location of choice, I guess, for something really special. I think my four ball might be... I would like to play golf with Barack Obama. I think that might be a bit of a random one, but I think he's a fascinating guy and I'd like to spend more time with him, perhaps. Tiger Woods, I think, has to be in the four ball as well. And then I'd probably throw Butch into the mix as well to make up the four.
Who's playing with who?
I'd put Tiger and Butch together to see how that worked out.
Oh, brilliant. So it's you and Barack Obama against Tiger Woods and Butch Harmon round Augusta.
Yeah, that would be it.
That's fantastic. Alex, if people want to get hold of you, please tell us your website and all your social media handles.
So my website's just under reconstruction. It is jerseygolfcoaching.com. On Twitter, it's just Alex Mullen, and that comes up as Jersey Golf Coaching. On Facebook, it's Jersey Golf Coaching Alex Mullen. or email alex@jerseygolfcoaching.com.
That's brilliant. And I now hand the podcast over to you again, and you get about a minute to 2 minutes just to thank people that have helped you along your career. So it's kind of the shout out minute, as it were. I think we've heard about Mr. Harmon, so I'm sure he'd be in there. But anyone else as well you'd like to you take this opportunity to thank that have helped you?
I think, you know, first and foremost, that my family, my mum particularly, having seen me through ups and downs and not knowing where I wanted to be, her support throughout, you know, particularly my training and ongoing has been fantastic. You know, Wayne Osmond down at Lamiel Golf Club gave me the opportunity to turn professional. Without that chance, jobs are limited on the island, so it was a real opportunity. And then the guys at Royal Jersey, James Evans and Aaron Anderson, back in 2016, offering me the chance to move there and progress with my career.
Fantastic. Alex, I've really, really enjoyed our conversation here. I hope people get a lot out of it, and I hope it inspires people not only to come over to the island to play in the event, but just to come over and play the courses and see what else the island has to offer.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on, and it's been great catching up.
Excellent. Alex, I'm sure we'll catch up soon. You take care till then.
You too. Bye.
Cheers now. Bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.